This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club here on Racing Post. The big thanks to Bruce for sailing the ship last week. I was away drowning my sorrows after yet another Norwich City defeat. But I'm sure the man himself, Mark Langdon, can cheer me up this time round. We've got plenty of great betting insight coming your way, including Mark's thoughts on every Premier League game, his nap, treble, and Dan Childs will be joining us later on in the show for his EFL tips. Mark, brilliant to be back. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, thank you, Jack. Yeah, I'm probably not as well as you. I'm sunning yourself in the south of France, but how the other half live, eh?
Well, we can kind of relate on both of our football clubs not being so great, can't we?
We certainly can, yeah. I didn't realise we were going to go into the North London Derby quite so soon, but no, an absolute shocker as far as Spurs were concerned. And it took me about, sort of, that's why we're recording on the Thursday, it took me until about the Wednesday just to be able to sort of stomach talking about football. I just wanted to, take in no content or anything really for a couple of days.
Well, we can use this kind of 45 minutes, hour as some kind of a therapy session, if you wish. It's funny, though. I was listening to last week's Bets Club episode on holiday, and there was talk of the anti-post kind of sack race market. And there was quite a lot of mention of Arteta in that. And I got back from holiday and read an article on a well-known football publication website. And they were kind of making out that this is the start of something special for Arteta. It's funny how fickle football can be, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, what, one minute your favourite for the sack race, the next minute. I saw one, it was Gal Clichy, who said that Arteta can be the new Arsene Wenger. So it was, you know, it's the way that football is. It will never change.
No, absolutely. We had some great Champions League action in the week. And Mark, you landed a lovely little 6-1 winner, didn't you?
Oh, Club Bruges. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic. It was on Tuesday night, wasn't it? I've been keen to take on Leipzig, really. I just don't think they're very good. But on the flip side of that, I mean, Club Bruges outshot Paris Saint-Germain. And then I don't think there was any sort of real doubt or question mark over the fact that they deserve something positive from that trip to Germany. So they've suddenly put themselves in with a little shout of qualifying from that group that includes Man City and Paris Saint-Germain. I presume that they won't qualify, but even if they drop into the Europa League, they might be a team to watch out for, I think, Club Bruges.
Yeah, it's well worth, if you are listening at home or on the go, carrying a little notepad around with you, because I know Mark's put up the teams against Leipzig and a few of his long shots over the week. So if you've got the equivalent of a horse tracker for Mark Langdon's Bets Club, then add them through the weeks. Let's talk about Manchester United, Mark. It was that man, Cristiano Ronaldo, saving Ole once again. And I think I've read the phrase papering over the cracks more in the last hour or so reading various reports than I have done in the previous couple of months. But it does feel like that way at Manchester United.
Now, it's an astonishing result, the Manchester United win, because, I mean, Villarreal had so many chances to put the game to bed. Even when it was 0-0, they were, you know, they're quite a dominant sort of side. Manchester United were all over the place, and they were missing, I think, three of their, what you would say, first choice back four. So I think you need to give them that. But the problems in midfield, the lack of press, the way that Villarreal just moved them around was, I think, for long term, is really alarming, you know, if you're on Manchester United in any of the markets. But they've got individuals that can win, you know, win matches. We've seen Pogba turn up big already this season. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo has on more than one occasion. It was him again. And if you've got people like that, you are going to win matches, because they've just got an abundance of talent. It's just not put together very well.
One of the most remarkable stats I've read for a while is the fact that he's now scored 12 Champions League goals after the 90th minute in matches. It's utterly ridiculous, isn't it?
That is crazy. That is crazy. And yeah, there are reasons for thinking that he's not a great signing in terms of like the collective of United, and that money would have been better spent elsewhere on, say, like a Declan Rice type player. But at the same time, you know, Ronaldo is one of the greatest goal scorers in the history of the game. So individually, he's always going to score goals. He did it for Juventus even when the team wasn't playing well.
Not the best week for Chelsea. They lost to Juventus and they also lost to Manchester City in an important Premier League game just a few days before. Some questions for Thomas Tuchel to answer.
Yeah, I think the game against City was a real bad one as far as they're concerned. Now, City were really good, but Chelsea were just a bit meek. You know, for European champions at home, in good form, you know, felt like City were there for the taking a little bit. It was a bit of a meek performance. And then they went to Juventus and Juventus just didn't fall for the kind of the trap really that Chelsea have been setting for so many teams since Thomas Tuchel, you know, became manager. Juventus just said to Chelsea, you have the ball and we'll kind of do what you do to the opposition. And Juventus, for large parts, in the last 15, 20 minutes, Chelsea had a couple of chances. But for the large part, they stood firm, defended well, didn't create loads themselves, but were just patient and waited for a moment on the counter-attack. It does make you wonder whether Chelsea need to just tinker slightly with the way that they play. Hard to say that given, you know, how well Thomas Tuchel has done since he went in as manager. But because of that success, I think teams are looking at them and sort of counter, you know, selecting teams to counter that. And even against Tottenham when they won 3-0 the week before, the first half there were problems there. And so I think Tuchel has got a little bit to think about. I'm sure it'll be fine when Mount and Kante are back in that midfield because they are key players. But just something that a setback definitely as far as Chelsea are concerned. Not a very good week for them.
No, absolutely. And it felt elsewhere like normality had resumed somewhat. Lionel Messi on the score sheet for Paris Saint-Germain against Manchester City. That was his seventh goal against Manchester City, more than any other player. Just brilliant. A real kind of trademark Messi goal, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely. I mean, the dribble, the layoff from Mbappe, the softly curled shot into the top corner. I thought it was a thing of beauty. Mm. It was... because it's Messi, you are going to elevate it slightly. You know, if Ander Herrera scores that goal, you go, oh, yeah, that was nice. But because it was Messi, because it was the first goal for Paris, because of the game it was in, you know, against Pep and against City, it did mean more. And then I don't think there's anything wrong with that and having a narrative and it sort of all working out. As far as City were concerned, it was a tight game. You know, one of those ones, fine margins. If Bernardo Silva scores the open goal at 1-0, they get it back to 1-1. I don't think they would have lost the game because they were chasing it. They ended up, you know, getting caught with that messy goal for the second one. So I wouldn't be panicking too much.
Evening on Tuesday. Front three clicking beautifully. Two for Salah, two for Firmino, one for Mane. And it was a nice response for Klopp's side, Mark, after what was a bit of a shaky showing against Brentford.
It was, yeah. Really, I mean, we sort of take it for granted just how good that front three, whatever the front three is, sort of are going to be now. And we just sort of go, oh, yeah, another five goals for Liverpool. I mean, the goalkeeping from the Porto goalie, Diogo Costa. I was on the Guardian podcast and I think it was presenter Max Rushton said Diego Costa would have done better in goal. I think, you know, three of the goals were his fault, but Liverpool still had to take advantage. And I thought it looked a really tricky group on paper with Milan, Atletico Madrid and Porto. They've got 6 points. I think the results have gone elsewhere for them as well. So, you know, that they're marching on towards the knockout stages. And of course they were our selection right at the very beginning, that they were the team that I thought were the best price and anti-post.
Yeah, as I said earlier in the show, definitely worth jotting down Mark's bets throughout the weeks just to keep a track of them. Finally, let's talk about Barcelona, Mark. I know we've discussed them at length on previous podcasts, but it really is going poorly for them. A 3-0 defeat to Benfica the other night. They're now 7-4 to qualify for the last 16. 2-5, not 2. Does the Europa League loom for them?
Well, the odds would suggest that it does. Assuming they don't finish bottom, and they surely going to finish above Dynamo Kiev. I think the 7-4 is a little bit big, I have to say, to qualify.
They were poor, though, weren't they?
They were poor. They were. They missed some big chances at 1-0, but I think they'll beat Kiev home and away, right? So, I mean, I maybe you can't take anything for granted as far as Barcelona are concerned, but if they do beat them home and away, they're on 6 points. Benfica have got Bayern home and away, and I don't expect them to get anything from those two matches. And then we're I think it's effectively going to come down to, because Benfica have dropped points in Kiev, I think it will eventually come down to that game at the Nou Camp between Barca and Benfica. I also would say as well that Barcelona have another little tick in their box that they've got Bayern really late on in that group, and Bayern will already have won it by then. Maybe they don't wheel out Lewandowski. Maybe there's a point to be sort of snapped up there that you wouldn't ordinarily imagine. But I mean, as we speak, Ronald Koeman's still the manager. I don't know if he will be by the time we finish the pod. There's talk in Spain of like a four-man shortlist really to replace him. Xavi Hernandez being one, Pirlo being another, Roberto Martinez also on that list. And then maybe a surprising one for those who followed the EFL down the years, but Oscar Garcia, the former Watford and Brighton coach who's currently managing in France. He did used to play for Barcelona. He's been sort of mentioned as an outside choice that, you know, if Xavi doesn't fancy it and they can't afford Martinez, then maybe he becomes a runner. I don't think any of them four sound particularly exciting to me. I think they should go all out for Erik ten Hag at Ajax.
Time for the match of the day. Coming up next, Liverpool, Manchester City, 4:30 on Sunday. This one looks a cracker, and it's our match of the day. Liverpool 2-1, 7-5, Manchester City 13-5, the draw. As always, we wanted your thoughts as part of our beautiful community, and we asked what was the value in this game. Now, probably one of our closest polls yet. Where's the value lying this Sunday at Anfield? 50% of you said that Liverpool is the value. 18% of you said Manchester City. And a fairly chunky 32% of you said the draw. Mark, the lovely listeners sort of leaning towards Liverpool this one at 2-1. Would you be in agreement?
I'm with the what you described as the chunky sort of amount that have gone for the draw.
You don't often see people kind of leaning towards the draw, do you?
Not to those kind of numbers in a big game, no. But I can understand really, you know, why people would think it. I mean, it's the biggest price of the three. Feels, I'd say, you know, as likely almost as the others. It probably should be the outsider, but you know, this reminds me, I think, of the game they played together in October 2018 when Mahrez missed the late penalty, 0-0. You know, there's only four shots on target in that game. It just feels a bit like the draw would, I'm not saying it would suit both teams, but it certainly wouldn't be a bad result for either team. You know, it would both mean that they've made good starts. I think that from City's point of view, you wouldn't want to lose again after losing in Paris. From Liverpool's point of view, it's been a great opening for them. But we've got some graphics going in the Racing Post on Friday from my colleague Simon Giles. And, you know, he's done this sort of graph that shows that while Liverpool are absolutely flying on expected goals, he's kind of combined it with ease of schedule. And Liverpool sort of sit out on their own in this sort of top corner of a team that's got the best XG, but had by far the easiest start on schedule as well. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration. Man City are so strong defensively. The question, I suppose, is we've got this great attack in Liverpool, a brilliant defence in terms of Manchester City, and which one breaks? And maybe it'll be that they end up cancelling each other out. I think it's a really tight game. It could be one of those that's, you know, fascinating rather than a classic sort of 4-4 or something like that, you know, just a real tactical match between two, you know, equally brilliant managers as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't realised until looking at the Premier League table earlier in the day that Manchester City have conceded just one goal all season. It's first against second. City were very good against Chelsea last week, weren't they? And Liverpool's most recent Premier League game was against Brentford, where they did concede three. How much are we reading into them two performances?
I'm not reading too much into the 3-3. I think Liverpool have defended pretty well apart from that. And so, you know, I'll just put that down as one of those things, really. They got caught up in a bit of a chaotic game. You know that if Matip and Van Dijk, you know, with Fabinho in front of them, Alisson behind them, that's a pretty strong kind of spine that has served Liverpool really well when they've all been together, you know, Champions League, Premier League. So I haven't got that many worries or any worries really about the defence. As far as City are concerned, of course, it throws up all of the old questions, doesn't it? Because they did play brilliantly at Chelsea. They did deserve to win. They still only scored one goal. It wasn't sort of the sweetest of strikes that eventually went in either from Gabriel Jesus. They then went to Paris Saint-Germain. They didn't score. And you are left with that lingering doubt as to whether they make the most of the chances that they create. And then you'll go back to the you know, the quite boring debate of whether they should have signed Harry Kane or another striker. It's just going to be the way. Whenever they play well, nobody will mention it. Whenever they lose and don't score, we'll bring it up every week. I just think in a game like this, as far as City is concerned, Guardiola will be all about control and he will not want Liverpool to counter-attack against him. And that could lead to a bit of a stalemate because, you know, Liverpool are always at their best when the two sort of wide forwards have got that space to run into. It is also worth mentioning City's record at Anfield is terrible. They won there last year, but I'm not reading anything into that because, you know, it wasn't a full cop. Henderson and Fabinho at centre back. It wasn't like going to Anfield on a normal weekend. City 7 defeats in 8 at Anfield. I mean, doesn't feel like a coincidence that they really do struggle with the kind of the crowd and the intimidating. What is, I think, become sort of, you know, one of, if not sort of the biggest game now in English football. It used to be Liverpool against Manchester United, didn't it? And I know that will be for, you know, those, you know, of a certain vintage, but these are the sort of the last two champions and they've built up their own kind of rivalry now. And I don't think City have dealt very well with going to Anfield and all that entails.
But with all of that being said, Mark, you're still very keen on Manchester City to get the job done in terms of the league as a whole, aren't you?
I am. And it's mainly just because of their squad depth. So many good players just come in and out of that team. I think Guardiola, manages that as very well. You don't often hear players complaining, do you? You know, like if Gabriel Jesus, for instance, gets left out in a game or, you know, they're bringing on Sterling or Ferran Torres hasn't been seen very recently. So I am keen on City. I just think Liverpool, and we might even see it on Sunday, Jack, because Liverpool's squad is, I mean, I'm not the only one to say it, but Liverpool's squad is the biggest concern. And it looks like Trent Alexander-Arnold will be out. And he's just such a big loss. I mean, I was looking at the stats. I mean, he's made the most passes into the penalty area in the Premier League this season. Nobody's had more crosses. And his key passes, he's joint top with Jack Grealish and Bruno Fernandes on 20. He's a playmaker from right back. And, you know, if he is out, and it sounds like it will be, it doesn't matter who plays there, they're just not as good. And so Liverpool do lose a bit of creativity.
So what's the best bet for this game then?
I think under 2.5 or the draw or both, I suppose.
Let's take a look at all of the other Premier League games.
Yeah, I'm going Everton or draw, double chance in this game. 1-2 Man United, not for me. They've had 3 defeats in 5 in all competitions. The 2 wins really late on at West Ham and Villarreal.
19th against 20th. Burnley, Norwich, where are we going here?
I'm going for Burnley, Jack, sorry. But on XG, they're 19th and 20th as well. I mean, the hope for Norwich is that Burnley have only had 2 clean sheets in their last 19, which is not something that people, I think, associate with Burnley. But I think they've actually done okay this season and should have more points on the board. You know, they were done late at Brighton. They were also done late against Leeds, weren't they, with a late equaliser. The Leicester was pretty late. Arsenal 1-0. It was tight. On another day, might have got a point out of that game. There were some worldies from Everton that beat them at Goodison. And even the Liverpool game, I thought they competed pretty well. So I think Burnley have definitely, I don't feel like they've lost their confidence. And I think maybe, worrying signs for Norwich.
Yeah, 60 shots for Norwich this season, just one goal from open play. The Canaries struggling at both ends. Chelsea, Southampton up next.
Yeah, I'm going here. It's odds against just about 11 to 10. Chelsea to win and under 3.5 goals. I know this is a bet that I think most people have when Chelsea are playing, but it makes sense. 23 of their last 24 wins in all competitions have been with under 3.5 goals. So if you fancy Chelsea to win, rather than take the fours on, you might as well sort of really push it out and try and sort of take a relatively low margin of victory. Southampton had the 0-0 at City. They've had a 1-1 against Man United. They're not picking up very many points, but they're not conceding very many goals either.
No, Leeds against Watford up next. I was listening and I hear that Bruce has had a little bet on Leeds to go down. I must admit, I took a bit of a gasp when I first heard it, but it kind of makes sense. They're up against Watford this weekend.
Yeah, I was in Leeds, in our Leeds office with Bruce the other day. He had to wear a sort of balaclava to hide his face, wouldn't he? If any of the Elland Road sort of masses saw him there. But a really tough game, this one for me. I thought 4-6, both teams to score was okay. There's no clean sheet in the league for either team so far. So in a tricky heat, that was all I could come up with.
Yeah, just a quick word on Watford though, Mark. I've been really impressed with what I've seen from them, because I thought out of the three teams to come up from the Championship alongside Norwich and Brentford, they were what I saw by far the weakest, but they've adapted well.
The results haven't been that bad at all, really. I do think, though, that they were lucky against Newcastle last week. But you always know with the Pozzos in charge that they will be creative in the transfer market. They will bring players in. You've not necessarily heard of all of them. If you walk down the street, you might not even recognise sort of half the Watford team. It's just the way that it is with them. And I'm always sort of prepared to sort of back the Pozzos to get it right, because they have done, I think, more often than not. And when they sack their manager, as regularly as they do, and people get really worked up about that, I just think it's a model that relatively speaking, has served Watford quite well. I know they've had a couple of relegations, but, you know, they're Watford. They are going to be, you know, fighting the drop. It's just the way that it is. You know, they've also been to a cup final and seen some wonderful players. And Ismaïla Sarr is another one of those that you feel sooner rather than later will probably, you know, really go on and play at a much bigger club.
Yeah, Sarr, Dennis, Sissoko, they've got sprinklings of Premier League quality there. And I think if you've got enough of them, they should be fine this season. Wolves against Newcastle up next. Doesn't sound the most exciting on paper. Bet for us, Mark.
I've got three.
Wow.
Both teams to score at 10 to 11, over 2.5 at the same price. And why not have a bit of over 3.5 at 9 to 4?
Well, I said not very exciting, and you've completely gone against me there.
You've fallen for the trap of thinking that Steve Bruce is like the old Steve Bruce. This Steve Bruce is Kevin Keegan on steroids. Newcastle's total XG, so that's expected goals for and against, is third in the Premier League this season. Their XG in the last four games is 15 in total. So the 13 goals that have been scored in those four games is no fluke. In fact, there should have been more. I don't know why and I don't know how, but Newcastle have just been absolutely crazy. They attack with a lot more players than they used to. There's not much control to them defensively. So Maximan is absolute joy to watch. They should have easily beaten Watford last week. I'm always nervous about sort of sticking to the same bet, and the nap last week was both teams to score in Watford against Newcastle, and eventually, you know, Newcastle will be involved in the game that's maybe not quite so chaotic, but I'm not sure it'll come here against a Wolves team that I quite like watching, even if they've probably not got the points on the board that their performances have deserved.
I think you've confused my slander of this game, Mark, as kind of defaming Steve Bruce's liquid football. But I was more talking about the fact that Wolves games haven't really featured many goals this season.
They haven't, but I don't think that's for a want of trying. They're pretty creative under Bruno Lage. And I see no reason really why they'll take too many steps backwards. And look, maybe it was just one goal, but I feel like that goal for Raul Jimenez could be a big one for him, because he will have had doubts and there will have been some confidence issues. So to score such a great goal at Southampton last week, I think can only do him the world of good as well.
Okay, you've convinced me, Mark. Well done. Brighton, Arsenal up next. Now, Brighton have started the season really, really well. I'm sure Bruce won't want to hear that, but they've, you know, managed to scrape a point against his beloved Crystal Palace last week. They go up against an Arsenal side here who, granted, the fixture list has been a bit topsy-turvy for them. And we've actually got a question from one of our followers that we'll answer later. But it's been hot and cold for them this season, but they've clawed their way into the top 10, three wins on the board so far this season. How do you see this one playing out?
I think it's, you know, in sort of a, was it a week after Jimmy Greaves died, sort of the football being a funny old game sort of rings ever more true, really, for Brighton. Mm. They played better last season and didn't get the results than what they are this season when they are getting them. I think this is a tough one to call. So I've gone for the draw at 9-4. But I wouldn't be amazed if Arsenal beat them. But I just, the price was on the cusp of where I wanted to back them. So I left it alone.
OK, Palace, Leicester. What are we feeling here?
Yeah, more confident selection here. If you like your Asian handicap, Crystal Palace plus 0.25. So you'll actually make a profit, even if the game finishes in a draw. I think it's going under the radar how bad Leicester have been. You look at the two games that they've won. They beat Wolves, but they lost on the expected goals in that game. And probably a little bit fortunate against Norwich as well. They've got an away game in Europe on the Thursday. So I think this is a tricky old trip to sell us.
For those who aren't that familiar with it, Mark, just explain the Asian handicap market.
Yeah, so a 0.25 that we're talking about here. Half your bet is on Crystal Palace plus zero, which is effectively draw no bet. And I'd hope that most people listening would understand what that means. Yeah. But if you don't, you get your money back if it's a draw. And the other half of your stake is on Crystal Palace plus 0.5, which is effectively a double chance, Crystal Palace or draw double chance. So if you have a £10 bet on Crystal Palace Asian handicap plus 0.25, £5 of it is on draw no bet and £5 of it is on double chance. And I think that Crystal Palace can get something out of the game.
Excellent. Your team, Spurs, in desperate need of a win against Villa this weekend, Mark. Do you see it happening?
I think at the prices, sort of 5-2, I'd back Aston Villa. I'll be going to the game, and I know the reaction if Villa start well or score first. It's going to be a horrible atmosphere for, you know, Spurs to try to play in. Villa have, you know, they've won at Man United. They beat Everton, you know, really easily. I thought they were unlucky when they lost 3-0 at Chelsea on another day. That could have been a lot closer. The mood around the Tottenham just not good after those three straight Premier League defeats. They're bottom four for shots and also shots on target, in terms of, you know, allowing them. So they're allowing a lot of shots. They've had the joint fewest shots as well, which is, you know, a horrendous stat when you've got Kane and Son in your team. So I just think that there's a lot of pressure at the moment on Spurs.
And finally, a game that features two teams with a lot of excitement around this season. It's West Ham against Brentford.
Yeah, I've gone for the draw. I think you could make a case for either of the two teams. It's probably why I've sat on the fence a little bit. West Ham going under the radar. I think they are playing sort of better this season maybe than even they did last year. I would have a slight negative about the fact that they've got a Thursday night game because I think the Europa League means a lot to the club and they'll put a lot into, you know, trying to make sure they qualify for the knockout stages. Brentford, just I'd say attack every game. That's maybe a little bit over-egging it because they're actually really good defensively as well. But what I mean is they are really aggressive in their games. You know, they make it difficult to beat you, as Liverpool found out last week. So that's why I've gone for the draw.
Yeah, they're obviously a good side, Brentford, Mark. I don't think anyone's, you know, denying that. Do you think they're running slightly hot at the moment, though?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they are, because I think defensively, their sort of numbers are stacking up in terms of the underlying stats. And I always fancied the front two to do well, Mbeumo and Ivan Toney. So no, not really. I think that they are, you know, potentially this season's leads, if you like.
There we go. I hope you jotted all of Mark's bets down for each Premier League game this week. Time for some EFL action with Dan Childs.
Hello, Charlesy. Good to have you back after you were away last week. You've got three EFL tips for us this weekend. Shoot away.
Yeah, going to start off with Ipswich away to Accrington in League One. I mean, you think about Ipswich at the start of the season, they were falling well below expectations, weren't they? Like, they didn't even win in their first six games. I think a lot of that was down to the amount of change that was with Paul Cook bringing, I think it was 19 players he actually brought to the club. But it's taken a while to settle down there, but it has settled down now for Ipswich. They've taken 7 points from the last three games. The last of those was a 6-0 thumping win at home to Doncaster.
And I know you had a decent go on them on Tuesday.
I looked at that game. I mean, Ipswich went into it in the relegation zone, and only just above Doncaster who are bottom. But I see Ipswich being top six minimum really this season. And I think Doncaster are going to stay down there. So I just thought a shade of odds on. They were a great bet, and I think they're a really good bet at odds against away to Accrington, who have started well, and now they're kind of fading a little bit. Accrington, they're in 12th in the league, Accrington, but they've taken 1 point from the last four games, so they're kind of going one way. Ipswich have started going the other, and I think that kind of process will continue. I think Ipswich will win up at Accrington.
And what else have you got in the sort of football league?
Well, sticking with another team in League One, I think are going to challenge for promotion is Rotherham, and they are up there. They're fifth in League One at the moment. They're playing away to Cheltenham, and I think Rotherham are going to be too powerful for Cheltenham in that game. They got relegated from the Championship last season, Rotherham. Bit of a yo-yo team. They often get relegated from League One, go back up to the Championship. And I think the same good chance that could happen again. They got 7 points in the last three games. They were comfortable 3-0 winners at home to a Wimbledon team that I quite like, actually, on Tuesday. They got Michael Smith, a centre-forward, who did well to keep him in the summer. There's a lot of interest in him. He's got 6 goals in his last 6 games. He's a powerful centre-forward, and I think he's going to cause a lot of problems for Cheltenham, who have got big problems at the back. They've got Will Boyles out injured. Charlie Ragland's major doubt with an injury as well. They lost Ben Tozer to Wrexham as well, just at the end of the transfer window. That's their three members of their key back three that were so important in them getting promoted from League Two. To lose all of those is a huge blow for them trying to compete in League One. They were hammered 5-0. At Sunderland on Tuesday, where that kind of weak defence got exposed. I think the same thing could happen at home to Rotherham.
And then finally, what brings down the curtain on your tipping for this weekend?
Dropping down to League Two now, I fancy Stevenage. You have had a sticky start to the season, but I think they'll win at home to Hartlepool, who are seventh. It's a lot of the leagues at the moment are very tight. You've got Stevenage down in 21st in League Two, Hartlepool seventh, but there's only actually 5 points between them in a really tight League Two. Stevenage, I mean, one of the reasons I think they've struggled at the start is this fixture list has been so tough for them. They've had six of their opening games have been against top half teams. Three of those have been against teams in the top four. So a really tough game at fixture list they've had. They drew actually 0-0 away to third place Harrogate last weekend, and they had the better of the game. They had the better chances. They're starting to improve, Stevenage. I think home advantage against Hartlepool, who are really a home team, I think, Hartlepool. They've got all but one of their points have been taken at Victoria Park. Away from home, they've only got 1 point from four games. They've got injury problems as well. The top scorer, Tyler Bury, who's been on loan from Millwall, he's injured. Key midfielder Gavin Holohan's injured as well. While they've been out in the last four games, they've only scored twice in those four games, Hartlepool. I think with those injuries and their poor away record, I think they're there for the taking. I think Stevenage will beat them.
Thanks, Dan. And we've managed to get through it without mentioning the North London Derby.
Okay, time for the best bets for this week then. Mark, some relatively poor selections last week, but at least the nap landed.
Yeah, you put in the boot in, Jack. Not only did Spurs lose, but you're right. The treble was down pretty early and the long shot got absolutely thumped. But the nap was the saving grace. And I mean, Souček to score any time. I mean, he did score, but of course it was ruled out by VAR. I actually got the notification on my phone saying he'd scored.
And they really do hurt.
It's the worst way to back a loser. But in terms of the player prop shop this week, Kuchka is somebody I've mentioned already before. He's 11-4 to get booked for Watford against Leeds. He he really is quite dirty. He's a very aggressive. He's in the top five in Premier League for fouls. He's third for most tackles. So you can understand how the two linked. I don't know how he's got away with the fact we've only one booking so far, but hopefully Simon Hooper's been watching the DVDs, the referee. He's got his card marked. And I was actually having a look at the cards in Leeds matches because in my head I was thinking Elland Road, you know, make sure it's feisty. And it's actually played out that way. In their three games so far, Leeds in the Premier League, already been 14 yellows and a red. So that might be something to watch out for as the season goes on as well.
Okay, that's the prop shot. What about your long shot for this week?
Yeah, Torino 3-1 plus to win the derby against Juventus. It looks like Belotti and Zaza could be back, at least on the bench for Torino. Dybala and Morata are out for Juve. I know they beat Chelsea in midweek. They defended very well. They counter-attacked well. This will be a different type of game where they're expected to sort of force the issue. This is still the same Juventus team that lost to Napoli and Empoli this season, made hard work against Spezia and Sampdoria as well. Torino unbeaten in four, and I really like their coach, Ivan Juric, who is a disciple of Gasperini at Atalanta. So he did well at Verona, and I think he'll do well at Torino as well.
Hit me with your treble for this weekend.
Yeah, so we're going to on the continent. Saturday, 7:45, Inter to win at Sassuolo. De Zerbi leaving Sassuolo been a real big blow for them in the summer. He's I think a really good coach. They've lost four of their six games on expected goals this season. Then at 8 o'clock in France, this is one for the lads. Nice are playing Brest, so you can make your own gags there. But Nice, a team that I've mentioned already on the pod this season, I like them. They've spent a lot of money in the summer. I think they've spent it wisely. They should have enough to beat Brest. And then finally, on Sunday, 6:30, not a usual time for a Bundesliga game, 6:30 on Sunday, but Leverkusen to win Arminia Bielefeld. They're second in the Bundesliga, Leverkusen, 4 wins in 5, should be able to make it 5 and 6.
And if you were to have just one bet this weekend, which would it be?
Right, so I'm going for the nap. I'm going to steer clear of the Asian handicap just because I know that some people don't like to bet on the Asian handicap. So I'll go Crystal Palace, draw no bet. If you have a look at Palace's sort of form this season, they've only lost to Liverpool and Chelsea in the Premier League. I thought they were really unlucky against Brighton, played excellently against Spurs. When they beat Spurs, all of the talk was about what Tottenham did wrong in that game, nothing about the way that Palace played. They look really solid at the back. I like Conor Gallagher in midfield. They have got this obvious issue about trying to score goals, and they need to work on that. But Leicester have looked really vulnerable to me all season long. And I don't know what's gone wrong. I can't put my finger on it exactly. It might just be the injury to Fofana, but there might be something else going on as well. But with the fact they've got a Thursday game in the Europa away from home as well, I thought that was another tick in the Palace box.
I'm really glad you've mentioned Leicester's poor start to the season because I've been really disappointed with what I've seen from them so far. Time for your Twitter questions. As always, we really appreciate you guys getting in touch with us. It's always a pleasure to hear what you're thinking, your questions for Mark. And if you do want to get your questions in on future episodes, then Twitter's the place to be. Follow Mark at Mark Langdon and at Racing Post Sport, and we'll be sure to read them out in future weeks. Let's start with It's Hans Gruber, who I know has been in touch before, so it's great to have you back on the show. And he asks, Mark, how important is fixture lists when it comes to the perception of teams? Arsenal have gone from jokers to heroes, but was it down to three perfect fixtures? Have good fixtures papered over the cracks, or is this a legitimate turnaround?
Well, in response to that, Jack, we had a sort of tweet from Mark Rogerson. Good guy, Mark. He sort of always gets involved in sort of Racing Post Sport chatter. He said another spin on the Arsenal fixtures. Their first three games were against the promoted team, who were bang up for it, and Arsenal had players missing. Then they played Chelsea and City. Were Arsenal as bad as everyone made out in the first place? And I tend to think that we do, and we spoke about this earlier on in the show, yeah. We do get really excited and downbeat on sort of one game form. It's just the way that we are as football fans. I think in sort of in respect to the sort of the perception of teams, I think that fixture list is really important because you know, Arsenal, if they lose to Chelsea and Manchester City, and let's say those games are 2 months apart, I don't think anybody says anything. You know, it's just, oh, well, you know, a tough game. We've been beaten by a better team. Because it happens, you know, back to back, and it follows on from, you know, a sloppy start at Brentford, that's where the crisis kind of element comes into it. And so I do think that you have to look at fixture lists, particularly, you know, teams that get overrated from having a soft run of fixtures, or underrated because they've played matches that, you know, are simply not at the level that they're about to be taken. You know, if you lose to Man City and Chelsea and Liverpool and, I don't know, Leicester and Arsenal, and then you're playing Burnley, you know, it's a completely different game. And so I do think you need to look beyond the results. And I think that the fixture list is really important to the perception of teams. And as a punter, you've always got to keep that in mind, I think.
Just aside from performances, I completely agree with all of that. I never mentioned this word with Bruce because I'd risk a potential sacking.
Oh, not momentum. You're going to mention momentum.
Now, I am a believer in momentum. I think it's possible to, certainly if you're on a run of losing games, I think there is something in that. I think losing can creep in and sort of manifest itself. Are you in agreement with that, or are you with Bruce?
I think it's more that the word momentum is used incorrectly, and that it's some sort of scientific you know, nature of force. And I think people confuse it for confidence quite often, which I do believe in. Yeah, I believe in confidence for sure.
Okay, no, that's what I wanted to know. Rob asks, listen to a lot of podcasts and keep hearing the phrase "too short for me." Why is something too short in the odds if you are certain you have an edge / very confident you're right? Surely a win is a win. We've spoke about this before, haven't we, Mark, in terms of it can be a good bet even if it's not a losing bet. And I think Rob's kind of asking a similar kind of question here.
Yeah, and we actually had another response to that one from Guy, who said, surely got to be a price that is considered too short. If you back a 1-3 shot, but they should be 1-2, you will lose in the long run. And I think that essentially is it. You know, if you are somebody that just has one bet a week, and, you know, you're thinking, right, I Man United are going to beat Everton. They've got Cristiano Ronaldo. Don't really care about the price. It's going to pay for a takeaway when they win. That's fine. But I think once you get to the stage of having sort of a number of bets in a day, a week, a weekend, whatever it is, you can't, you know, if you haven't, if you're constantly betting at sort of what would be considered bad value, then you're going to lose or have more chance of losing in the long run. It's a bit like, imagine going to the shops and you say, I really fancy eating some roast beef Monster Munch. And I'm sure most people listening would like to eat a packet of roast beef Monster Munch. They're usually a pound. You go into the newsagents and the newsagent says, well, no, they're really popular at the moment. Give me £3. And you're like, what? Why? Like, well, you know, it's just everyone wants them. So, you know, that's the price. And then you have a look and you see, well, there's some Frazzles. And then, you know, they're only a pound and they're, you know, they taste just as good. And so you kind of, you know, you think, well, there's better value to be had in the Frazzles, you know, like at what price do you say no to anything? And I'm terrible. If you're talking about like car insurance or, you know, mortgages, I've been absolutely useless at that sort of stuff. And, you know, I won't bother taking the time. I'll go for whatever, you know, the first one that sort of comes to hand or whatever. And, you know, it probably cost me an absolute fortune. But when it comes to betting, something that I'd like to believe I know something about, I think it is important that you don't pay those premiums, if you like. And also, I've mentioned this before, but if you've got the time to price up some matches, I think it will make a world of difference to the way that you approach and look at betting. Because if you, if you say you price up the Premier League games and you make Manchester United a price against Everton, then you'll at least have an idea of, you know, what you consider the value to be, you know, if you are going to place that bet. And Rob did come back and say that, you know, somebody just a real casual punter, and you know, that's fine. I think if it works for you, that's fine. But the kind of why you keep on hearing too short for me, phrases that people will have a price that they're prepared to pay for something, in this case, a potentially winning football bet. And if that price is too expensive, then they leave it alone and go for something else.
I'm awarding that response the best response to a question of all time. We had Frazzles in there. We had Monster Munchers. And I think what I've concluded out of all of that, Mark, is you're the go-to man when it comes to betting, but someone like Martin Lewis would absolutely despise you.
he probably would. He probably would. He's a very successful man, isn't he? But, it's not for me.
Right, let's get a question from Brian. I like this one because I've got a lot of friends who avoid these types of bets. He says, Saturday lunchtime fixtures have cost me so many bets down the year, so I swerve the early games. Are there any stats to back up my theory on shortest priced of three outcomes comes in less often than in the 3 p.m. games? I don't know about you, Mark, but a lot of my friends often avoid the early games in case they ruin the Akkas early on. But is there any hard evidence to suggest that Brian is right here?
The only person I knew to ring on this was the soccer boffin himself, Kevin Pillane, the Racing Post sort of betting analyst. He says he hasn't done any research on favourites winning sort of early games, but he's done a lot of work in to whether there are more or fewer goals in early games or late games or afternoon games. And he's of the opinion from all the research he's done that it doesn't matter what time the game kicks off, the same amount of goals, average are scored. And therefore, it's his opinion, without sort of looking into it, and you need a lot of time to look into it, that because the goals, there's a relationship between goals and sort of favourites winning. And therefore, he believes that there isn't actually anything in it. But I do understand the sentiment of not wanting your bet to be done too early.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Brian. There is no worse feeling in betting than having your acca down before the three. One final, Mark, and we'll go to Gary for this one. And he just wants some we've got an answer from our non-league guru, Andrew Wilshire.
I have, yeah. So Wilsh used to do a lot of the non-league tipping in the Racing Post. Now he's too busy with American sports now. I managed to get one out of him though for the weekend. So he says Halifax to beat Barnet at 11-10. The Shaman have started the season in great form, scored 9 in their last 4. Should continue their good run against the Barnet team, who have conceded the most in the league and won just one of their opening 8 games. I didn't even realise Harry Kew had been at Barnet, but he's not only been there, he's been sacked recently as well. I mean, Wilsh knows his stuff. He tipped up Dagenham at the start of the season at a massive price. I'm not saying they're going to go on and win it, but they're currently top. So he said that. Gary also asked whether we think the Jersey Bulls can go all the way to round 1 of the FA Cup this year. I mean, I would be guessing if I was to say so, but wouldn't it be good to see if the Epsom Eagles could play the Jersey Bulls? that's the game we all want to see.
I must admit, I thought the Jersey Bulls was some kind of like premium milk or something like that. But I hope for your sake, Gary, they can. Also, you mentioned the Epsom Eagles there, Mark. We had a lovely email from our colleague Joe Champion, and he played for the Epsom Eagles.
They did. I mean, the Epsom Eagles are now sort of our team to follow, aren't they? Throughout the Saturday and Sunday league. So good luck to the Eagles, hopefully flying high this season.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've ever played for the Epsom Eagles, then feel free to tweet Mark. I'm sure there's a few more of you out there. Let's finally touch on the Nations League. We've got the semi-finals and the finals coming up next week. Unfortunately, another international break. It feels like we've only just had one, but we've got Italy-Spain on the Wednesday. This is the 6th of October. And then we've got Belgium-France on the Thursday, both 7:45 kickoffs. Any thoughts on these games, Mark?
I just thought that Italy to win the whole thing, around about 100-30, which is with some bookmakers, biggest price of the 4 teams. I mean, they're at home, so they've already got a bit of a leg up there. I think the best 2 teams, you probably say it's France and Belgium, but they're playing each other. Italy, I know it was a bit of a struggle, but they did beat Spain on pens in the Euros with home advantage as well. Hopefully they can frank that form. And yeah, I mean, we saw Portugal use home advantage to win the Nations League sort of the first one of them. Maybe it can work again. I'm not sure home advantage is being factored in enough. Certainly not, you know, 100-30 for the European champions.
There we go. Thanks very much, Mark. I really enjoyed that this week. So thanks to you as always. If, as I said, if you'd like to get questions in for Mark in the future, you can follow him at Mark Langdon on Twitter or at Racing Post Sport if you want to get involved in our polls. We really appreciate your support on the opening few weeks of Mark Langdon's Bets Club. As always, we've given a lot of tips out in this episode. Please don't feel the need to back them all and only ever bet with money you can afford to lose. If you're listening to this on iTunes, then please feel free to give it a positive review. If you haven't enjoyed it, please don't. Gamble safely, and we will be back soon after the international break. Thanks very much to Mark, and see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.